Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the STEM Files on Blog Talk Radio, where we highlight the best and brightest in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. I'm your host, Tariq Muhammad, Chairman and Chief Scientific Officer of Original Man Scientific. I'm usually joined by my co-host, Vice Chairman Jabril Muhammad, but I'm holding it down for us today. So we have a three-time guest on the show tonight, Victor Muhammad, biomedical scientist, animal scientist, hard-working student minister, and most importantly, a hard-working Muslim, FOI. Welcome again for the third time, Brother Victor. How you doing, sir?
I am doing well, and thank you so much for having me on the show once again. And yes, I'm doing well. Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. So the topic of interest is quite similar to the last two times you were joining us on the show. And it's resisting the disease microorganism. And that's kind of a short way of saying resistance to different types of organisms that have been made to resist some of the things that we have been naturally gifted in our bodies. But can you expound upon your topic and what inspired you to go deeper into the subject?
Sure, thank you. The genesis for this particular subject was the growing I would consider it an epidemic of organisms, microorganisms that invade the human body and really the animal body, because problem not only exists in humans, but the problem also is beginning to exist in animals as well. Those animals we raise for food and fiber, and those animals that we raise as pets are suffering the same diseases as we, as humans are. And I awoke maybe, I guess, about 3 weeks, a month ago, and I was reading an article on the real threat of antimicrobial resistance in the diseases that affect humans. And as I was reading this particular article, I said to myself, I said, you know, this has been a growing trend since I read the first article back in 2001, when the Washington Post published a study or published a report that laid out the fact that the HIV was, and that's the human immunodeficiency virus, the one that is reported to cause AIDS, the acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, that it was becoming resistant to the cocktail drugs that were being used at that time. And we're talking about 2001, so that's what, roughly 17 years ago. Mm-hmm. And at that time, when I read that article in the Washington Post, I believed that I had a solution to that problem. So what I did, I wrote a proposal that I was seeking funding from some of the major funders for scientific and biomedical research to give me the funding to develop a treatment, a successful treatment that, in my understanding and my calculations, that would work no matter how many times the virus mutated. It would still, it wouldn't matter, because the process that I believed I was blessed to develop would not matter. But when I wrote it and I sent it to my VC, my venture capitalist for him to raise the money so that we could do it. After I sent it to him and we talked, fortunately, I was able to contact him before he presented it to people, because twice before that time, I had submitted proposals for funding that were denied. Proposals were denied funding, and each time while I was in the library doing literature searches, because as a scientist, you must always go to the library so that you can stay current on the most novel research that's going on in your field. And
right,
so
right.
While I was in the library just reading the journals to find out what was going on, I saw one of my research projects that where I had been denied funding, it was coming out of China, where someone had gotten my proposal to China. They had done the research, and they had published their results in one of the major journals. And the other other proposal that I had submitted for funding, it was done at Johns Hopkins, at the med school at Johns Hopkins. So I contacted my friend 2 days later, a BC venture capitalist, and I told him to return my proposal. And I made the decision then, this again was in 2001, that if I could not do my own research, then I would prefer to die with the research project in my head rather than have another project stolen from me and done by someone else where
right,
I nor
right.
the people who produced me would gain no benefit from it, and it could possibly be placed on a shelf and never used, because a lot of research, that's what happens to it. It's purchased from the inventor or taken from the inventor and placed on the shelf because they don't want it on the market. That's a whole nother subject, and I don't want to go there during this discussion because I want to deal with microbial resistance and why this discussion is necessary. So
yes, sir.
That was my first encounter with bacteria. When I say microorganisms or microbial, I mean what that means is bacteria, viruses, protozoa, prions, things like that. And these
right.
are the agents that infect the human body. And these are the agents that cause most of the diseases from which the human and the animal suffers. And so when I was reading this journal about a month ago and I saw this particular article on the real threat of antimicrobial resistance in the microorganisms that are infecting humans, I said, you know, this is something that can easily be, there can be easy methods for evading this if we take the necessary steps in our understanding and take the necessary steps in our daily lives, we can easily overcome this. And to give you an idea, or to give the audience an idea of the effect of antibiotic resistant microorganisms, approximately the fact that these bacteria and viruses have become resistant to the antibiotics, the penicillin, ampicillin, the different antibiotics, they cause 23,000 deaths each year in the U.S. alone. And we're talking about diseases now, or bacteria that have become resistant to your regular penicillin or ampicillin or erythromycin and your different antibiotics. And so
right.
23,000 deaths per year occur today in the U.S. alone. This isn't worldwide. This is just the U.S. because these microorganisms have become resistant to your antibiotics. And some of the main diseases or microorganisms and the diseases that they cause in the U.S. are pneumonia, E. coli, gonorrhea, staph infections, tuberculosis, malaria, HIV, influenza, meningitis, fungal infections, and parasites. And so these are just some of the ones that that come as a result of this resistance in the U.S. The economic cost in the U.S. for these diseases becoming resistant is $55 billion each year just in the U.S.
Wow.
This is the cost, you see. And this is why someone like your radio show is vital and necessary, Brother Tariq. And when we use the word vital and necessary, it means, the definition of necessary means, something cannot exist without the presence of that thing.
Right,
and
right.
So the American population has been, whether it's intentional or unintentional, the American public is saddled with the Super Bowl, the hockey national and international champions, the Winter Olympics. We are saddled with pro basketball. We are we're caught up in the presidency of the United States. We're caught up in who will be the next candidate for the presidency. We're caught up in all these things that that permeate our daily lives, but we don't pay attention to things like this. And just looking at the economic cost of viral and bacterial resistance in the United States, it gives us an idea of what we're dealing with. $55 billion a year from that it costs the American public because of diseases becoming resistant to the antibiotics that we would normally use. So that gives us a very startling outlook, and it doesn't look good. And to give us an idea of our current trajectory, antimicrobial resistance could claim 10 million lives globally every year by 2050 if something isn't done about it. You see, so while we as Americans are spending time learning the latest dance, debating who is the most effective rapper, going to the Academy Awards and who will be interviewed or not interviewed during the Academy Award red carpet stroll, we are facing something that, according to the current data from the American Medical Associations, and I'm not talking about the one, the AMA, I mean all of them, this kind of data doesn't strike the John Q. Public or Susie Q. Citizen, and so we don't realize really what's going on and what the costs are to us, and we don't realize that we do have alternatives that we can use to evade these things. And so during the discussion this evening, I'd like for us to touch on some of the anecdotes that we can use to circumvent these things.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yes, sir. You know, and as it relates to this so-called flu that's going around, there are a lot of, and it's not just this particular flu from this past year, but, you know, just instances of people contracting the flu in the past. Just based on the mortality rates and people who are losing their lives from it, though the family members of those that lost their lives, I know it's a little bit off topic, but I wanted to know your viewpoint on it. What is the reason for the loved ones of the family members only to become interested when it attacks their families? How can we get people more interested even when it doesn't strike home?
Well, that's a very good question, and it really parallels what I was just describing with the current climate in America, where the people are constantly bombarded with things that stimulate their appetites. When I say appetites, that is for fun, that is appetites for pleasure, whether it be sex, alcohol, drugs. The people are constantly bombarded with appetite for material things, the latest car, the latest headphones, whether you're getting the Sony whatever or the Beatbox. We're saddled with getting the latest iPhone, whether it's 10 or 11 or 9 or X or whatever. Samsung Galaxy this, and whether you're paying now $1,500 for the latest purse or handbag that's on the market. And so you as a scientist or as a person trying to gain the people's attention, you have to compete effectively against these desires that are being stimulated in the human being in America. All people have desires. That is part of human nature. There is nothing wrong with having a desire. But when you have a society that plays on your desire for pleasure, then it saturates our minds with things that we desire, where we are no longer paying attention to those things which are important, such as our health. And constantly, when I speak in different parts of the country and around the world, I tell the people that in America, the average person suffers from some form of mental illness. And we don't believe that, and we don't think about that. But I could prove it in a very short period of time. One of the ways that I point this out to the people is that we will shoot one another if someone puts 87 grade gasoline in your Lexus or your Infiniti. But we will go to McDonald's or Burger King or Wendy's and buy some food to feed our children. And we see no problem with giving our children on a daily basis McDonald's. But yet, we get angry if someone puts the wrong grade of gasoline in our car engine. So this is a form of insanity. We do it every day, but we don't realize that this is not normal behavior. Then we wonder why at a certain stage, around 15, 21, 25 years of age, we began to find these different sicknesses, and in the 1960s, to give you another example, that the National Cancer Institute, if you check the databases, you can find it. In the 1960s, this phenomena that we call cancer was basically and virtually non-existent in the African American. In the 1960s, early 1970s. So cancer is something that began to rise in black people in America in the late 1970s, going into the 80s, to the point where it is today, where it's epidemic. It has reached epidemic proportions in the black community now. So, so to answer your question more specifically, in order to make a case, Brother Tariq, on getting our people and getting the people, because poor whites, Hispanic, blacks, and even rich whites are suffering today from these impairments, because everyone is now focused on everything, probably except their health. And even I sit and I watch television. I listen to people having discussions about health and what's good for you, and you should eat this and you should eat that. And most of what I hear, I disagree with. Because if you were to question much of the advice and the advertisements that you hear on television, radio, and the experts that you find on the talk shows, and they're telling you this is good for you and that's good for you, well, you probably won't find those results in a referee journal. What I mean by referee journal, meaning that this was published by experts who have degrees, PhDs or master's degrees in that particular subject, where they did a scientific study, and that study was based on or verified by the use of mathematics and statistics. You won't probably find most of what's being reported as something being good for you or that you should follow this health regimen. You won't find those results in a referee journal. You probably won't be able to go to the New England Journal of Medicine or the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences or Nature or Science and find an article that will verify what these people are saying to you. You see?
Right.
And so you would have to combat, and you would have to be as prolific in radio shows, newspaper, internet, YouTube, television, the talk shows. You would have to be just as forceful and dynamic in getting your message out as the people are who are getting the messages out for advertising the automobiles, the computers, who advertise the cell phones and the latest cologne by this actress or whatever, you see, the latest sneaker tennis shoes by this athlete. You would have to be just as prolific in getting your message out to the people as they are, and that's the only way that you're going to be able to get your message across.
Yes, sir, absolutely. Okay, thank you so much for that. I know there are others who may be listening that may have wondered the same. So now I want to get more into the anecdotes you were talking about now. With the common person in the general public, when they hear the word antidote, they often think about some type of chemical in a little vial or something like that. But when you say antidote, what do you mean exactly, and what direction would you like to take the solution for this problem in?
Well, in this particular instance, when I say anecdote, and what I intend by the word anecdote in this particular instance is a solution, an answer. You see, anecdote just means some solution, some answer to a particular problem. That's all it means.
Right.
And what I would say is that some of the old adages from many years ago that we've heard a billion times, one of them, for instance, is an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I have long preached to people, the best thing to do is not to get sick. You do not have to get sick. That is a misnomer. Getting sick is not something that's normal. You don't have to get sick. The more you avoid getting sick, the better off you are. Because once you get sick, then your body has to now, in addition to carrying on its normal bodily functions, keeping the nine systems in the body at a point of homeostasis, which means normal function and behavior, you also have to now combat and fight against whatever has you infected. So if you can just avoid getting sick, then you're better off. Most of the time, when we get a disease, and I'm speaking now from 35 years of just working in research and biomedical research for 30 years, I'm speaking now from what you would call an educated guess.
Yes, sir.
Because I haven't done research on what I haven't done research to prove what I'm about to say, but I've done it enough where I'm satisfied with what I'm about to say. If you were to study yourself and those around you, in most instances, when you get sick, particularly with a viral or bacterial infection, cold, flu, things like that, it generally means that your body is weak. Something has weakened your immune system. Consequently, most of the time, that probably comes from just being tired. In America, we are very busy people.
Yes, sir.
We do a lot. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're doing work. We just do a lot of moving, because the definition of work is W equals F times D. Work equals force times distance. That means that if we are actually working, then when we finish, there should be some product that we have to show for.
Right.
But if we are honest, most of us just move fast, and we move a lot, and we call that work. Because at the end of when we finish doing whatever we are doing, we have no product to show for. And we wear down our bodies. Most of us live a stressful life. We have bad relationships, whether that be marriage, whether that be work, whether that be friendship. We have bad relationships. And these pose stress on us. They create anxiety. Most
right.
of us have poor diet. Even those of us who think and believe that we're eating well and have good diets, we have poor diets. If we're eating things like nuts, greens, cornbread, seafood, when I say seafood, I mean shellfish, shrimp, lobster, crab, all these things.
Right.
All these things are deleterious to human health, and they wear down our bodies. We drink too much. We drink, many of us, we drink daily. We smoke cigarettes. We smoke marijuana. And I know that I'll probably receive a lot of slack about the marijuana because, you know, many people believe in marijuana. And I'm not
okay.
saying whether it's good or bad. What I'm saying is that it's still smoke that's coming into your body. And I'm very sorry, but the human body was not designed to inhale smoke. It wasn't. You know, and that's just a fact. And so all these things cause stress to the body, and they wear down the immune system, even if it's just from fatigue. Once the immune system is worn down, then it becomes easy for something to attack the body. Now,
right.
another note for us to consider. Now, we walk around daily with bacteria and viruses already in our bodies. So if
right.
you were to check our nasal passages and our throats and mouths, most of us right now have the rhinovirus, which causes the common cold. We have the influenza virus, which causes the flu, and probably the herpes virus, and even herpes, human herpes 6, which when you examine cadavers, people who have died, I think it's something like 98% of all the people who die who have been tested contain human herpes 6 in their eyelashes, in their eyeballs, and different other parts of their body. So we walk around every day with viruses and bacteria in our bodies. But it is when we become tired, when we become fatigued, when we are stressed, when we're dealing with anxiety, do these microorganisms begin to multiply. And then when they reach a certain number of so many copies or so many cells of these things per cubic centimeter or milliliter of blood, do they reach what is called in science toxicity. And when it reaches that number of what we call toxicity, you call it a cold. You call it a flu. You say, I've got herpes. You see, the virus for herpes has been there all along, but because something stressed you, something caused you to be, caused us to suffer anxiety or something like that, something that caused the immune system to get weakened or slow, then the virus is able to replicate itself. So you start to see signs of herpes like the bumps and the blisters and the itching and things like this. And so, but it's been there all along. And so what we have to do is to do better with our lifestyle. We have to eat more onions and garlic in our food, not raw, but cooked in our food. We have to drink more water. Simple things like that that don't cost anything. I think onions are about 99 cents a pound, you see. And if we just cut up an onion in our soup, if we were to just use onions when we cook our fish, small fish, not very big fish. Mm-hmm. I won't go into the biochemistry of fish and all of that right now because that's a whole other subject, but I will say that we should limit our fish where it's around 2 pounds, and we should only eat fish with scales. We should not eat catfish and eel and all these shark and all these things. It's not good for you. And eating like this, it curtails the amount of disease that affect the body. And the more red meat that we eat, I know we like steaks. I mean, there's nothing like a good ribeye with good marbling in it, and you know, if you get it blackened, because about every 6 months I'll eat one, because I mean, it's just good. But when we start eating red meat every day or 3 times a day, for breakfast we're eating sausage, bacon, and ham for breakfast. Bacon, and ham. Then at lunch we're eating a hamburger. Then for dinner we got a pot roast or a steak. See, you know, this is just too much. And this is deleterious to human health. And meat, red meat, generally will contain more microorganisms than any other, than most other food particles or food substances that you'll eat. So just simply by cutting down on the amount of meat that we eat, we can see a change in our the amount of colds and flu that we get.
Right, absolutely. Yes, sir. And you know, just coming off the mechanism behind how a human being becomes sick, what gives our open enemy the ability or the wherewithal to weaponize food or to weaponize any type of chemical that would normally not affect us? What gives them that ability to do that?
Well, every person has the right and the ability to become civilized. Civilized means one having knowledge, one having culture, refinement, one having knowledge of all of the sciences of life. The sciences of life are math, chemistry, biology, physics, economics, jurisprudence, law, finance, business, agriculture, aquaculture, chemistry, music, religion, sociology. These are the sciences of life. Engineering, mechanical engineering, these are metallurgy. These are the sciences of life. The science of mating, the science of warfare, the science of business. These are the sciences of life. These are the sciences that are necessary to make a human being a civilized entity. So when you study these sciences, then you too will come away with the same knowledge that you described that an enemy would have. And so if you have the requisite knowledge that the enemy may have, then you will understand what the enemy is doing because you'll be able to recognize the signs, you see. Because everything in nature that man faces, man gets a warning before there is an attack. So when you hear people say, oh, I didn't know he was like that before I married him. Oh, I didn't know she was like that. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Because you got at least one warning. Life is only required to warn us once. Anything beyond that initial warning is considered mercy. That is what the word mercy means. Undue kindness. Kindness that you and I receive that is not due to us. And so you and I have the same opportunity to go to the library and read these books just like everyone else does, just like, as you said, an enemy does. You can read the same chemistry book that everybody else reads. I remember when I was first hired at the National Institutes of Health, there were the people that I worked with, most of them were magna cum laude of their Harvard Med School class. They had come from Caltech, and, you know, they had come from Johns Hopkins Med School, and I worked on my PhD at Ohio State, but I never mentioned that. When they asked me, you know, Victor, where'd you go to school? Because among them, that's a very important thing, where you went to school. And so I would say Alcorn State University, a little black school down in southwest Mississippi. And they would kind of snicker, you know, to themselves, kind of laugh, because to them, you know, I was beneath them. And so one day I said to them, we were sitting around, because I don't respond when people want me to respond. I control me. I don't allow others to control me. I don't allow others to get a reaction from me when they want a reaction. I react when I'm ready to react. So we were all sitting one day, and some of the same ones who had asked me this and kind of snickered after I answered them, we were all sitting around talking one day. We may have been in a journal meeting, and the subject arose, and I asked them in front of everyone, not in an attack way, but in a very dignified, classy way. I said, when you were in graduate school, in undergrad, which biochemistry book did you use? And they gave me the name, and I said, yeah, I used that one. And I said, when you were doing your master's degree, which physiology book did you use? And they told me, I said, yeah, we used that one. I said, well, what about biochemistry? which biochemistry book did you use? They named the biochemistry book, I think it was Leninger. I said, yeah, I used that one. I said, so you pay $40,000 a year, a semester for your degree.
Right.
And I paid about $500 a semester for mine, and we read the same books. I said, so if we use the same book to take biochemistry and physiology and organic chemistry and nutrition, we use the same books. Your school costs $40,000 a semester. Mine costs $500, but we use the same books. And I said, look at us. We're both here working as researchers at the National Institutes of Health. You make the same money that I make. I said,
right.
So what's the difference? What is the difference? If we use the same book, how is your knowledge greater than mine? And see, and so that put an end to that, and they never approached me with that again. But this is what I'm saying to you and to everyone listening, that you have the responsibility of educating yourself and seeking knowledge. You
right.
know, when you are an educated person, then people can't play a trick on you. The so-called enemy cannot play a trick on you, because you now have the requisite knowledge to prepare yourself and protect yourself. And this is what's important, you see. I hope I answered your question.
Yes, sir. You did more than answer. You shed a lot more light onto it. And just coming from the biochemistry side of things, I want to talk more about the severity of a condition as a result of something being introduced to your system. I want to use the example. Are you familiar with Eazy-E from the NWA?
Am I familiar with what?
Are you familiar with the rapper Eazy-E?
I am, yes, somewhat.
Okay. Right. So in 95, he contracted HIV/AIDS, and he was not able to recover from it, or they didn't have a solution for him, so they said. Just speaking on the severity of how things, of just how bad things can get, what would you recommend for something, for someone in that particular situation who has been told, you know, there's no way out, you have no other options, it's death? What would you say to that individual? How would you help them to come back into a normal state?
Well, I remember watching the movie Goldfinger when I was a boy.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I was at Johns Hopkins Med School and I was studying the genetics of glaucoma, I was doing glaucoma research from the genetic point of view. And that was very hard work. And we used to be in the lab at midnight on a Saturday night. We would be in the lab because the research we were doing, it required that. And I would work so hard that sometimes I couldn't go any longer, and I would get up and clean my bench, let everyone know I'm leaving, and I'll return when I'm better. I would walk out of the lab, get on my bike, and I don't mean motorcycle, I mean 10-speed, and
yes, sir.
On my way to my apartment, I would go by Blockbusters and I would get Goldfinger. Then I would go to Subway and get a 12-inch turkey sub on wheat. And I would go by 7-Eleven and get a pint of Häagen-Dazs Run Raisin ice cream and a quart of apple juice. and I would go home to my apartment. I'd cut off all the lights, and I would put Goldfinger in the video.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the scenes that I never forgot in Mr. Goldfinger is when he had all the other criminals at his Thoroughbred Ranch, and they were looking at this scaled-down model of Fort Knox. And one of the, and they were going to steal the gold from Fort Knox. And one of the criminals in the room said to Mr. Goldfinger, "How can we break in Fort Knox? It is the most protected, well-fortified places on the earth. How do you intend to break into Fort Knox?" And listen to Mr. Goldfinger's response. Excuse me. He said, "Yes, yes, yes. It is well fortified. It is well protected. Yes, it has soldiers around." He said, "It, but at the end of the day, it's still just a bank. And banks can be broken into, and banks can be robbed." And so I liken that to the scenario, and I've used that for the last 30 years when I've talked to people about HIV infection. HIV is just a virus. At the end of the day, it's just a virus, you see. And television and people can make anything a boogeyman. If they use the right language and scare you, because you don't know, because you haven't gone and read anything. You haven't educated yourself. You see, you haven't gotten a book, a genetics book or a book on virology or a microbiology book and studied retroviruses. You see. And if you did, you would understand more about HIV, the human immunodeficiency virus. And you would know that it's just a virus. That's all it is. It's a virus. And your body can beat a virus if you were to keep your body healthy. Now, the particulars with EVE, I don't know. And one of the things that you're trained to do as researchers and scientists is that you're careful about what you say. Because until you have the facts in your hand, you really can't comment on something. Because a lot of the research that we would do when I worked in a lab, there would be three labs or four labs in a row at NIH, and we were all working on the same project, using the same tools, the same reagents, the same glassware, the same animal models, everything. But if you would pay attention to the way a publication is written, the publication will read like this: "In our hands, we found such and such results." Did you hear that? In our
yes,
hands.
Sir.
Now, why is it written that? Why do we write it that way? Because we can only report what we found while we were working on a particular thing. We can only report what we found at this particular time. If you find something different, then that's what you found. We can't comment on what you found, you see. And so HIV can be beaten. There are people living with it right now. I work with the virus when in some of the labs where I've worked, and I have found that some of what's being reported today, I find that it is not consistent with what we found back in the 90s. We didn't find HIV to be as virulent and as tough as what's being reported. You know, but you're not going to have many people who will come out and say that because they're not going to risk their scientific profession, you know, and be ostracized. But we just didn't find it, you know.
Right.
And so the objective today, I would say to people, and back to the central point of the resistance that's growing in microorganisms today, is that, you know, there is a component that has to be added to the... Someone is breathing into the phone pretty hard. Okay. One of the things that has to be done is that we have to now begin to change the dynamics. Give you an idea of what I mean. In 1984, there were 13 companies in the U.S. and perhaps around the world that were making antibiotics. 13 in 1984. But by 2012, there were only 4 companies in the U.S. and perhaps around the world that are now making antibiotics. There has not been a new antibiotic produced since the early 1980s. So we're talking about going on now 35 years, and we haven't made a new antibiotic. So what about the mutations in the microorganisms, the viruses, the bacteria, the flu? What about the mumps? There's a growing resistance now in the strain of the mumps that the data is reporting. So what about that? You see, how do we deal with that? What are we going to do with these things? You know, a new deadly fungal infection that doctors can't really treat today is being reported in the journals. Deadly fungal infections where your antibiotics are not working. Then the repeal of Obamacare is now making it more difficult for public health officials to deal with the rise in antibiotic resistant microorganisms. There's a rise in the mumps. There appears to be resistance in the microorganism that causes mumps. So now there's a threat in new cases of mumps. There's a yellow fever outbreak recently reported in Brazil. And because of so many people who from the U.S. who traveled to Brazil, in the major cities like Sao Paulo and some of your other major cities, now the CDC and other health officials in this country are worried about yellow fever being contracted in America.
Right.
You see. Now, how many of us have heard about these things? What are we going to do about them? You see. So while we're partying and enjoying ourselves, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't party, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't enjoy yourself, but while we're partying and enjoying ourselves, look at what's going on right around us in this country. We're not talking about Zaire or Congo. We're not talking about Mozambique or Indonesia or Ethiopia. We're talking about the United States of America.
Right, right.
So what are we going to do about it? See, we have to now, the medical world, as we have known it, is dying. I'm sorry to tell you.
The medical world, as we have known it, is dying. Western medicine is dying. And if microorganisms are becoming resistant to the drugs and the antibiotics that have traditionally been used, if there hasn't been a new antibiotic developed since 1984, and if in the 1980s there were 13 companies producing antibiotics, and today there are only 4, And one of the reasons that the companies have dwindled the way they are is that, if you did not know, it takes billions of dollars. Please listen. It takes billions of dollars to develop a new antibiotic, from research and development to putting it on the market. It takes billions of dollars to do so. And the recovery in the investment is just not there. So you have people who make business decisions. This is not so much about helping someone as it is making a business decision, because these companies have stock, investors to whom they have to respond. They have a board of directors to whom they must answer. The CEO and the chairman must answer. So these are business decisions, not so much scientific. This is the business of science and the business of medicine. And these are the variables that the 300 million people in the United States must become familiar with. So what are the answers to this dilemma that we are now discussing?
Yes, sir. And just, you know, just speaking from personal experience with dealing with people that I know that are suffering or have very poor immune systems, and they may not necessarily know how to combat it, but I really want to go more into prevention. For those who think that they're healthy or think they have that, you know, some type of immunity to some of these things going around, what would you say to an individual? What would be some recommendations that you would have, food wise, economic wise, or anything like that, that would be a preventative measure to dealing with some of these things?
Well, as I have already pointed out, very fundamental things. One of my philosophies in life is this: anything or anyone with whom I cannot get along without stress is removed from my life. I will try to negotiate with it or them first. But if I cannot find an amicable resolution, then that individual or that thing is removed from my life. I do not allow stress in my life. When I work a job, I do my best. I do not allow a supervisor to stress me. If I know that I have done my best and that is not sufficient for that supervisor, I say to them, I say, well, sir, ma'am, do what you have to do. They say, why are you saying I should fire you, Victor? I say, if you believe that that is the solution, do what you must do. But I have given you my best. And if you have nothing more to say, I'd like to return to my office. You see? And
right.
You must make decisions to allow yourself to have that kind of fluidity. What do I mean by decisions? I control my spending. In most cases, if I do not have the money in my pocket to pay for something that I desire or need, then I go without it. I don't go and get into a lot of debt with credit cards and credit. This causes stress. This causes you to have to be on a job taking stuff that you don't want to take. If you are with someone in a relationship or marriage and you cannot find an amicable resolution with this individual, then the best thing to do is part company. That is the best thing to do. Generally, the way a relationship begins, the way it will end and continue. Generally, people do not change. In most cases, you cannot change anyone. Change is a decision that that individual, him or herself, must make. You can advise them. You can give them pointers. But they have to make the decision, and it has to be something that they themselves want to do. If you cannot find commonality with an individual in a relationship, then part company. There are approximately 4 billion women on this earth and approximately 3 to 3.2 billion men. So if you cannot find peace with someone, leave them alone. It's real simple. You see?
Yes, sir.
And you will find that you will be a much happier person. You must spend time alone. You must stay away from the telephone, the television, the radio, the computer, the iPad, the iPhone, the iPod. You must stay away from these things. You must stay away from people. You must stay alone sometime. Spend time alone to give yourself the opportunity to reflect. You must reflect. You must take the time at some point at the close of your day to reconsider everything that you did during the day before you go to sleep. Play your day over in your mind. Consider the decisions that you made. Ask yourself, could you have done better? What should you remove from your life? What should you change? And when you have settled this, you will find that you will be at much more, you will be much more peaceful. If you drink more water during the day, you will find that you sleep better at night. The more you drink water, the more you will find that you avoid sickness. Quite often, but I believe, and I've got no statistics to prove this, so don't nobody challenge me, but I believe that the majority of the diseases and sicknesses from which we suffer come simply, one of the variables involved is we just don't have enough water in our bodies. Quite often, we function on a daily basis, dehydrated.
Right, right.
Not having enough water in our bodies will cause us to be dehydrated, which causes anxiety and causes stress. If you drink plenty of water, you find that you're not stressed as much, you don't have as much anxiety, and also you'll find that you don't anger as quickly, which is another problem for stress. So very simple, basic life things that we can implement in our lives can change the fate of the diseases from which we suffer without even taking medication things. Again, when you cook plenty of onion and garlic in your food. Put as much onion and garlic in your food as you can withstand. If you do this on a daily basis, you'll find that the amount of cold and flu from which you suffer will greatly diminish. Quit eating so much. A 16-year-old human being, male or female, except when you're sick, do not need to eat 3 meals a day. It is not necessary. When I first started to work at the National Institutes of Health in 1990. Back then, I was a little bit more rambunctious than I am today. I would go to the hospital where the nutritionists were, and I would find a PhD nutritionist at NIH at the hospital, and I would say, hey, can a person be healthy if they only eat 1 meal a day? And they would say to me, oh, no, you can't be healthy. No, 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 you must eat 3 meals a day.
Wow.
I would say to them, I said, I said, is that right? I said, explain that. Oh, I mean, you have to. I said, I can understand that you say I have to, but I'm a scientist and you're a scientist, and you know that anything we say, we must be able to explain the reason. So
right,
you explain
right.
to me the reason that I should eat 3 meals a day. Explain that to me. And the only thing they could say was, oh, but you've got to do it because that's how you're healthy. I said, and so I wouldn't continue with that. I thought that that was his only argument. I said, okay. I said, look at your stomach. I said, your stomach is hanging over your belt. I said, look at me. I'm the same weight, same height that I was in the ninth grade. The ninth grade of high school. You know, I said, I weigh the same. I said, how many times last year were you sick? Oh, I was only sick about 3-4 times, Victor, last year. I said, well, I haven't been sick in 28 years.
Woo! 3-4 times
said,
a year.
So, I said, so explain to me again why it's necessary to eat 3 meals a day. And he would shut up. I don't do that anymore because back then I was just cantankerous and I wanted to use my understanding to, I guess it was more so to challenge the establishment because I was angry because my eyes had been opened to the reality of the world. And I wanted to use that to hurt the people who I saw who had hurt me. But since that time, I've grown tremendously, and I don't do that anymore because I know that that's not the kind of gentleman that I want to be, and it's not congruent with the kind of man that into whom I'm growing. So I don't do that anymore. I still teach the same philosophy, but in a different way, not so much combative or challenging as much as it is in a conciliatory manner. But
yes, sir, absolutely.
One of the things that we have to do, and the central point from which I want everyone to leave this discussion, what we have known as Western medicine is dying. The leaders of this world no longer have the foresight that they had 100 years ago. The leaders of this world, if you pay attention, they are confused and they have turned in on themselves. They remind me of leukemia, where they are a body that has turned in and is attacking itself. There is a phenomenon in science called apoptosis.
Right.
What that means is programmed cell death, where for some reason, without you understanding, if you study apoptosis, the cells in your body start to just die, and you don't understand the reason. So when you look at the leaders of this world, and when I say this world, I mean the West, which encompasses Europe, America, Canada, Australia, and some of the other countries from around the world, the UK. But they are no longer able to provide the leadership that they did 100 years ago. So now there has to be another mind has to now rise and begin to find the solutions to the problems of the people of America. And those problems and those solutions must permeate the entire earth, because medicine, as we know, is dying. And in a short period of time, based on the statistics that I gave you today, and these statistics were born by the companies and individuals that run and control Western medicine. That by 2050, 10 million people a year will be dying from antimicrobial resistant diseases, organisms. 10 million people a year in the United States. So that means that people like myself must be given the opportunity and the resources to find the solution to these problems. I believe that we have them, but we must be given the opportunity and the resources to do so. In 1996, I was meeting with some venture capitalists in New York City in the garment district. They were helping to raise money to produce a manufacturing facility to produce biologicals that would work on viral diseases. And after the people conversated with me for a while, I'm going to tell you what they told me. The man dropped his head. He was from a millionaire. He was a venture capitalist, and he had made his millions in the garment industry, but he was willing to put together the funding to build a manufacturing facility. And he said to me one day, after he dropped his head, and I think he wanted to cry, and he said to me, he said, "Victor," he said, "it is a shame that you are part of a people who do not recognize who you are." He said, "If you were white or Jewish, you would already be a millionaire, because what you've done with no money, no laboratory of your own, no resources, no nothing," he said, "you took a product from a concept all the way to getting a developed product, and you even got it clinically tested with no money." He said, "but it is a shame that you are a part of a people who don't even recognize what they have." He said, "if you were a member of any other race of people, they would treat you the way you're supposed to be treated."
Absolutely.
That hurt. That hurt. We're talking about 1996. That hurt me, and all I could do was drop my head, because there was nothing I could say, because I knew he was telling the truth. But I'm a member of black people. I love black people. I can't help myself. I was made to love black people. But not only do I love black people, I am actually willing to help poor whites, Hispanic, and even rich whites. I really don't care, because after being in America now for 461 years, we have suffered disrespect. We have suffered malignment. We have suffered every social ailment known to humankind. And what that has done for us is made us able to grant respect, to grant fair treatment, to grant freedom, justice, and equality to every human being on the earth, because no one has been deprived of those things more than the black man and woman in America. So we are the most qualified now to make sure that that is dispensed now to every human being on the earth. So what we're doing now is finding solutions now to problems like the antibiotic resistant microorganisms that are rising on the earth. We believe that we have the solutions to that. We just need the right resources in order to be able to do it.
Right. Wow. Well, I'm I've definitely been reminded of how much I can do as a scientist in my own right, so I do appreciate that. And I also want to say thank you again for joining us on the Blog Talk Show again, on the STEM Files. And you are more than welcome to come on the show again if there's anything else that you would like to share with the general public and so forth. We do plan on working very heavy with you and what you're doing. Is there any final thing that you would like to say in regards to your topic to those who are listening?
Well, I don't want to. One of the things that we as African Americans will traditionally do, we have many discussions about things where we point out problems, but
right.
we don't put together a resolution. I'm telling the people that I believe that I have been given solutions to many of the problems that we suffer in this country and around the world. And I believe that I have solutions to the antibiotic-resistant drugs, microorganisms that are plaguing us. So if you want to help, you can contact me via email at Victor, V-I-C-T-E-R, dot Muhammad, M-U-H-A-M-M-A-D, at gmail.com. Because we are putting together the requisite things needed to build a laboratory and do the necessary research and development to develop these treatments. They're going to be non-toxic. They're going to be effective. They're going to be low cost. And the whole nine yards. And all we ask is the opportunity to do them. Again, victor.muhammad at gmail.com. Victor is spelled V-I-C-T-E-R. Muhammad is M-U-H-A-M-M-A-D. Victor.muhammad at gmail.com.
Great. Thank you so much again, sir. We will definitely, I actually have some things that I would like to share with you as well that can help you in your efforts. But that will be one of the things that that we discuss one-on-one. But once again, thank you for joining us tonight on the STEM Files. Your presence was greatly appreciated, sir.
Thank you, and have a good night.
You do the same. And for those who are listening, our next guest for our March 11th show, Sunday, March 11th at 6 p.m., is actually my little sister, Nadia Muhammad. She is a beautiful, beautiful sign language master. She loves studying linguistics and different types of languages. And linguistics, to those who may not know, is a form or art of, is a type of science. So she will be on our show kind of giving us more insight into sign language and more details about it, what it entails to even learn how to, you know, speak that way. So thank you to all that are listening. This has just been another cracking open of the STEM Files on Blog Talk Radio. We will love to have your presence again next Sunday, March 11th at 6 p.m. Peace.